you have to go back to the roots, right?
Yeah.
Jewelry throughout history has been about telling a story. It has been about telling the world something about yourself. Jewelry should be a unique communication. It's not about everyone having the same bracelet or the same big statement necklace or trend. It's about something much more personal. And if you look through history, whether it was ancient Egypt or in South Asian culture, you look at the old texts and the old drawings, jewelry is this incredible medium for storytelling. And I want us to go back to that aspect of jewelry. I want to go back to what makes this piece feel special to you.
Hi, everyone. This is Lauren Petrovic, and welcome to another episode of Responsible Luxury. On this show, I sit down with the most extraordinary leaders behind driving responsible consumption and production in the luxury goods industry. We discuss things like market dynamics, product strategies, emerging technologies, and entry into Web3. My guest today is Rosina Sami, the founder and CEO of The Jewelry Edit. Recently appointed as adjunct professor by Parsons School of Design, Rosina brings over 15 years of industry experience to the table. Prior to her work in the jewelry industry, Rosina was working as a corporate attorney before embarking on her entrepreneurial journey in 2006 and successfully established a renowned jewelry brand which has graced the shelves of leading department stores and boutiques for over a decade. Not only has her jewelry line been embraced by celebrities, but it has also received high praise from prestigious publications such as Harper's Bazaar and Vogue, who recognized Rosina as a visionary designer to watch. In 2019, with the rise of fast fashion, Rosina took her passion for sustainability and diversity in the jewelry industry to new heights with the launch of The Jewelry Edit. The Jewelry Edit revolutionizes the way customers shop for jewelry by curating collections that focuses on empowering sustainable designers. With Rosina at the helm, The Jewelry Edit ensures that responsible luxury is at the forefront, providing a platform for talented designers who prioritize social responsibility and embrace diverse perspectives. Join me in welcoming Rosina Sami, a trailblazer in the world of responsible luxury and an inspiration for industry professionals and jewelry enthusiasts around the world. Hello, Rosina. How are you?
I'm well. Hi, Lauren. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm really excited to have you on today. In fact, when I first started planning out a few of the guest speakers I wanted to have on the show, you were one of the top. So it's a real honor to have you on today.
Well, thank you. I remember meeting you, and I'm excited to see all of these new projects you have going on. I think they're important for the industry, and I'm just excited to be a part of this dialogue.
Thank you. Today, I want to put the spotlight on you and your journey and talk more about The Jewelry Edit. So can you take us back to where it all started? Why don't you start the beginning of your career and how you entered into the jewelry industry?
Sure. Well, gosh, my career was certainly not a straight line. Like many people, it was a lot of twists and turns that resulted in me being here doing what I do. I think, as you know, I had a pretty traditional career path in the law, and then I went to law school. I practiced law in New Zealand. I then moved to the US and did a master's degree in law at the University of Virginia. And then I took the bar and I worked at a Park Avenue law firm, kind of, you know, doing all the things young lawyers are supposed to do. And just sort of, it was serendipity, I guess. I was looking for a way to exercise that sort of creative part of my brain. And I happened to receive in the mail, I had not requested it, I received in the mail a catalog from Parsons School of Design, and they had various sort of night courses. And I managed to work into my schedule by ducking out of my law office at around 6 to take a class in fashion as a business. And one thing led to another. I discovered that, you know, this was something that I really enjoyed. It allowed me to connect with my culture because I was so fascinated with jewelry and South Asian jewelry. And I could go on and on, but long story short, that sort of was the trigger for me realizing that maybe there was something here that I wanted to pursue. And it's been so nice to come full circle because, of course, this semester I'm teaching a course at Parsons. I'm teaching law to seniors in their fashion program. So it's a nice way to close the loop on that story.
It really comes full circle. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm sure the feeling is indescribable.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful to give back and to be a mentor. You know, the Jewelry Edit, we do so much mentorship. So it's very much in keeping with kind of what I do in my full-time job. But what's also nice is it gives me insight into this next generation. So I'm learning as much from them as I'm sure they're learning from me. You know, I am able to provide them with a real, like, practical reality of what life in fashion is like outside of school. Like, we bring in a lot of guest speakers. You know, next week we're doing a tour of Atelier Jolie, which is obviously, you know, trying to be a pioneer in sustainable fashion. So I get to take them into the real world, but they also give me great insight into what's important to them and what companies they watch and what moves them, what they're thinking about. So frankly, from a customer viewpoint and a learning exercise, I'm getting an incredible amount out of it as well.
That is incredible. Fascinating that you brought up the Atelier Jolie. We should touch upon that later. But I think that's a really good movement, what she's working on now.
Yeah, I probably will have more insight in a week once I've done the tour. Everything I've sort of heard so far and my communication with them in terms of setting this up, I love that they also want to do really what we at the Jewelry Edit want to do, which is kind of create a dialogue, create more transparency, bring consumers into this journey that we're all going on to try and find a better way forward in the industries, the fashion and jewelry.
So there was a point you were working designing jewelry and had this idea for the Jewelry Edit. Can you tell us more about how that idea came?
Absolutely. And I think I'll go one step back, which is back to like why I love jewelry and what started that whole passion inside me to really tell stories through jewelry, which is I think that for some people, maybe their first connection to jewelry is a lot about a big diamond or seeing stars on the red carpet and this incredible jewelry or looking at the Tiffany's blue box and all of these heritage brands. For me, you know, I'm South Asian, I'm Sri Lankan Tamil by origin. I was born and raised in New Zealand. I'm of South Asian descent. And I think it's part of our DNA that jewelry is just a part of the way we communicate. And so my first connections with jewelry was really through storytelling in that aspect. It was like my mom putting on jewelry. And in India or Sri Lanka, jewelry isn't necessarily what we think of in terms of big earrings. It could be an anklet, it could be a nose pin, it could be hair ornaments, you know, flowers and jewelry in your hair. And that sort of storytelling really resonated with me. Like I wanted to learn more. And then I got into Indian classical dancing, which is called Bharatanatyam. And that was all about adornment and wearing armbands and belts and anklets, just all of this incredible storytelling. And so that was where my passion for jewelry really originated and what I sought to showcase when I created my own jewelry line when I first started. And I always wanted to keep true to that mission. And unfortunately, as my designs evolved and I worked more with department stores, I was kind of part of that wave of fast fashion jewelry towards the end of my designing. And that meant that what people were asking me to create were things that were more on trend, creating them as quickly as possible, as cheaply as possible to make certain deadlines. And that was not what jewelry had really been about for me, right? And so I just remember, and I always talk about this one incident where I had to make, it was oxblood red bracelets. And they'd come out like a slightly different shade than the on-trend red. And so it was sort of this question of like just disposing of thousands and thousands of bracelets, which to me just felt like such a waste. It was unwarranted. And I think that was the trigger that got me to think I need to go back to doing what I love and talking about jewelry in a way that allows people to connect, that's not about creating something disposable. And that was the impetus for the Jewelry Edit. And I thankfully, through my work, had fostered a community of designers who thought like me. And I was able to go to them, get their thoughts, connect, and start to build this community of designers who are really as passionate about the environment and about making change as I am.
There's such incredible depth with the Jewelry Edit. There's so many stories to tell. And I think you're right. When people look at the jewelry industry, they think right away, they think of Cartier, they think of Tiffany, these big heritage brands, but may not realize the deep-rooted human psychology, human emotion, being able to connect generations and really be this powerful communication tool where you could look back in time and see what was the sentiment of that community at the time. And I'm also really fascinated by your perspective and your impetus of starting the Jewelry Edit.
Yeah, I think I'll jump in because you raised a really interesting point, which I've written about a little bit, which is that people, including myself, you know, I think my first big purchase at 16 was a pair of like silver Paloma Picasso Tiffany earrings, right? Or 21, I can't remember why. It was a sweet 16 gift, I think, if I recall correctly. But we all really idolize those brands and they have incredible marketing dollars behind their brands, which helps sort of penetrate these young markets. Even a young 16-year-old girl in New Zealand is looking and coveting these pieces. Yeah. But those stories aren't really told as transparently as they can be too. Because when I look at something like Cartier, and this is where I've written a little bit about it, there's a great story of Indian jewelers creating Cartier and working with the folks at Cartier to create these incredible pieces, about some of the founders of the brand visiting India, getting and becoming enamored with the colorful stones and the artisanship that you saw in Jaipur, right? And then incorporating that into Cartier designs. And so I think it's really interesting to now be able to tell those stories with those added levels of color to them so that people can really understand what Cartier is, because it's beyond actually all the big, beautiful jewelry that you see. There are different layers. And I think telling the artisan stories are important too. And so that's what I always like to highlight amongst the stories of the heritage brands as well.
Yeah, it definitely also adds the human perspective, because at the end of the day, these aren't just products. It sounds a little dramatic saying history in the making, but I mean, so many people involved in this piece, all of these other people it took to make this. So I was reading an article on you before, and you mentioned throughout history, jewelry has always been a means of storytelling and self-expression, and now shifting towards meeting the human desire for creative expression and bringing back the world of craftsmanship, uniqueness, and self-awareness back to modern culture. Talking a little bit more about the Jewelry Edit and how it's changing the landscape of how traditional jewelry has been shopped in the past, can you give us a brief overview of the Jewelry Edit today and its mission for the future?
Absolutely, I'd love to. So the Jewelry Edit is a primarily e-commerce jewelry boutique. And what differentiates us is that we focus on two very clear missions. One is to elevate socially responsible designers. So I'm going out there and finding designers who are as passionate about the environment, about making change as I am. We don't carry anything mass produced, nothing made in China. These are all pieces of jewelry that are labors of love, works of art, have a handmade touch to them. And then we also elevate diverse voices in the industry, because I think there's so much to be found and to connect with out there that you're not going to find in a regular department store. And these voices often go unnoticed by the industry and by customers and consumers. And so my goal is to get these exciting designs and designers seen and allow them to tell their stories. And I can relate to that personally, because as a designer of color, when I was launching my line and walking into department stores or meeting with merchandisers, you know, I don't think I met anyone diverse in those buying departments in those years when I was doing that. And I was often pigeonholed and merchandised in a certain way that was really, my jewelry was very much labeled like global or ethnic. And it didn't allow for the true storytelling that was involved in my pieces. So yes, I really focus on finding unique designers with something different to say. And I think, you know, what we have really been able to do successfully, because now we carry over 75 different designers, I find voices that you won't find anywhere else. Or we tell the story in a way that hopefully you will find a connection to the piece that goes above and beyond the fact that it looks incredibly pretty. I think people don't come to the Jewelry Edit for like a tennis bracelet or a pair of diamond hoops. They come to find a story. And I love that the pieces that we're able to curate do that. And it's a different sort of luxury experience is how I describe it, because luxury doesn't have to be about a price tag. It can be about finding a piece that was hand-painted and hand-patina. It has beautiful workmanship, and yet is maybe $80. So, you know, we sell things that are $80, we sell things that are $8,000, $16,000. But it's about finding that story and connecting with it. And I think all of our favorite pieces usually have a story, right? You could have picked it up in a market in Mexico or Italy when you were traveling, or it could be something that your grandmother gave you. And I think your connection to that piece is always going to mean more to you because it has that story behind it. So we are trying to create that same journey of storytelling through that buying experience for people.
So when you start to look for designers to place inside of the jewelry edit, how do you measure sustainability of the artist? What are some things that you initially look out for?
Sure. So I think we have to be quite careful, right? Because no jewelry is sustainable. We're not there yet. And so I think in terms of, I always say socially responsible, because I think we're all on a journey, in our own personal journey, towards becoming more sustainable. I think if the heritage brands yet haven't sort of mastered what that journey should look like, I don't think I can expect emerging talent, like a small designer out of Brooklyn, for example, to have got there yet either. And so I look at each designer very personally, and everyone is at a different stage. What I like to see is a commitment to making change. And obviously, you know, the starting point is nothing mass produced, nothing's made in a factory, but there are different levels of where they are in that journey. So some of our designers use fully traceable stones, some use Fairmined gold, but some have only some of their collection that they can describe in that way. And so maybe we'll focus on those pieces. Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting. Like I carry Pippa Small, who's obviously a pioneer in this space. And she's, you know, she's a great example of someone who's very transparent about her jewelry. So some pieces are like, yeah, this is fully traceable. This is who made it. I can tell you where these stones are from. And then other pieces, she's like, I sourced the garnet in India and I don't know where the garnet is from. No one can tell me that. And so long as there's that transparency where you know what pieces mean what and you're able to be clear about that, I think that's what I like to do. And again, it's everyone is kind of on their own path. You know, we've had a lot of debate around recycled gold versus Fairmined gold, and I'm sure we'll get into that later. But every designer is kind of navigating their way, and we're trying to help them by continuing this conversation, providing them with all the resources we can, especially for designers that we mentor, in terms of making change.
Definitely. The traceability aspect of gemstones, I see it certainly being the future. There's a lot of hurdles before we get to that reality of it being more common business practice. But certainly, like you said, having it all starts with saying, we don't know everything, but we're starting, and we're starting to educate ourselves. And even Pippa Small, like you said, she's an incredible pioneer in the industry with the sustainably sourced materials for the overall jewelry market. Do you think that sustainability is going to stay as a niche part of the industry, or do you think it's going to be more widespread?
Well, I think it has to trickle down from the top, right? So that's where the smaller players without the sort of budgets that the big brands have will take the lead from, right? So just as you saw it with Conflict Diamonds, right? And the Kimberley process and how things sort of trickle down. That's what I want to see happen in the industry with heritage brands who have the resources really taking the lead, because they can also influence the consumer mindset. And in my view, that's the biggest challenge right now. Like, we have done so many initiatives around being more responsible, both from a designer perspective and in terms of educating our customers. And to me, the biggest hurdle right now is getting our clients or customers to really embrace the understanding around social responsibility in the industry and wanting to participate and actively shop those missions, right? And their values in that way. The disconnect right now is that, especially at the Gen Z level, we see a lot of passion around fashion designers, jewelry designers, being more socially responsible, being more sustainable, but the connection to then how they spend their dollars isn't there yet. And I think we have done, and it's obvious just because by the success of brands like Shein and Temu and so forth, all those fast fashion brands are so successful, and yet they don't necessarily align with the values of Gen Z. And I think we see that firsthand. We have tried so many initiatives to get customers more engaged, and they're still not there yet. And I hope that with bigger players in the industry, having more conversations, having more educational components in terms of what they're doing in this area, that will help trickle down to where it becomes more mainstream, where customers ask more questions. And we've clearly seen that when it comes to conflict diamonds. And I always joke that like Leonardo DiCaprio needs to make another movie about Fairmined Gold or the gold industry, or get this conversation started again, because I think very few people now are going to walk in and be happy with a diamond that comes from a diamond that hasn't met all the protocols of establishing that it's conflict free. Right. And even though there are many, many challenges still in that area, I think that's just a given. I think the same thing needs to be asked about jewelry in terms of environmental damage, labor exploitation. And I think I am excited to have these sorts of conversations so it becomes more a part of the consumer psyche to start thinking about these things.
Thinking of the consumer, I'm constantly asking the question to my suppliers and also on the other end to my clients. And I think that the gap between customers demanding sustainability, and especially if we're focusing on jewelry, is how do we connect the supply chain from the start to the customer, but also humanize it in a way where they're able to connect it. You know, how can they connect their personal story to the story of this piece of jewelry? And I think technology can be a really powerful tool to help fill that gap. And I still think it's really early too. I mean, like you said, customers aren't going into the jewelry store. Customers aren't going into Tiffany's when they're buying a ring or buying a bracelet and demanding, where is this metal from? Where are these stones from? But slowly over time with more education, I think we'll definitely get there.
Yeah, it's a couple of things. I think that it's not deemed important enough yet for customers to ask, right? And that's why I talk about things becoming more mainstream through a movie or through, you know, a book or something to get people thinking about it differently. And we hold a lot of in-person events. So we've had a pop-up store on Park Avenue, which we were there for over 18 months. I just did an event on Friday with Alice Ciccolini. I've done events with Pippa. And we're always making it part of the conversation so that we can also get kind of real life input from customers. And it is a long journey. So I get disheartened when I think whether it's designers or industry folks are looking at this conversation as something just to help get some moral goodwill or help sell a piece, or they think they need to because it's like a box to check, right? For us at the Jewelry Edit, this was part of our DNA when we formed the company. That was part of our mission. It wasn't something that later on, like a strategic group came to us and said, you need to be doing more of this or that, or it was like something on a line sheet to check off. This was really a big part of who we want to be and the environment that we want to create. And so it is a long journey. We're just at the beginning of it, but the more people who participate, I think the better.
Yes. And hosting in-person events is one of the best ways to get people engaged and involved, because when you're in person, you're connected, you feel it in the room, you understand it in a way that, you know, if you watch something, maybe a video on YouTube, or you're sitting down and reading an article, it's not the same type of impact. Right. Customers engaged and educated.
No, I agree. And I think the video now, also people have very short attention spans. Yes. So it's like you have a 30-second like TikTok video, which is where people will gain all their information, right? So you have a very short amount of time to capture attention and tell a story. And so I agree with you. Like when we've done in-person events and we've done a lot of Q&As, whether it's with Pippa or Alice, and they're able to tell the story about how they source or how they their design process, that's how people connect. It's also, you know, for us, it was a real learning experience. You know, we created this Fairmined Gold collection. I'm happy to talk to you about that later. But one really interesting sort of anecdote I can share from that in terms of where consumers are at or customers are at right now is that we sold this Fairmind Gold collection. I had an event in the store where we brainstormed with Fairmind Gold designers, Judy Guy, Bliss Lau, like, you know, really, again, like leaders in the industry in the space. And we kind of were brainstorming, like, how do we tell the story? How do we get customers engaged? And I showcased from about 5 or 6 designers this Fairmind Gold collection, including a collection that we had created in-house at the Jewelry Edit. And I found that, unfortunately, we really had to shoehorn in this sort of environmental story after the fact. Customers were first sort of enamored by the way the pieces looked, rather than that environmental story. And unfortunately, the anecdote that I'll share is that, you know, we had one customer like so excited about the piece and she loved it. And I told her the whole Fairmind Gold story and the reality that if they use Fairmind Gold, you know, it's going to be maybe 20% more expensive. And so then her response was like, well, can I just have it made in regular gold and then have it be 20% less? Which of course like defeats the whole mission behind how the jewelry was created. And the designer, which I think is a real tribute to her, did not want to make the sale by making it in regular gold, right? Her whole purpose in creating the piece was to use Fairmind Gold and so wasn't willing to compromise on her principles. But I think that shows, you know, and that's just one anecdote, it's one customer, but it shows how we're still having to tell the story and figure out way different and new ways to tell it so customers can appreciate the value and what they're buying and the importance of something like Fairmind Gold.
For the younger generations that are up and coming, who are going to have more of the buying power the next 5 to 10 years, they seem to have more evolved, more conscious purchasing principles. Hopefully this will help balance out the sustainability in the market, but like you said before, there's people who say they want more sustainable goods, but don't actually buy it. I'm curious, when you strategize marketing campaigns outside of in-person events, what are ways that you try to help get the word out for sustainability and especially education, right? You have short 30-second videos on these social media platforms. How are you able to capitalize on that?
I mean, it's hard. And it's again, something that I think we really have to invest in over time. So we do things like tell jewelers stories through Q&As, which are on our site. I write articles. I have one coming out soon, which I think is going to be really interesting around sort of colonialism and how that impacted environmental change and degradation. And so I think it's just through that storytelling aspect. And then with each design and each product we sell, we kind of try to describe whether they use recycled gold or Fairmind Gold, the traceability of stones. And so that sort of front and center in terms of describing the jewelry.
Right.
But I have found what's been most successful have been small group activations. Even if it's through an online medium, it's getting and connecting with customers on a more personal level so that they understand the story a little bit better. So even if it's a customer who's found a piece online, but then we follow up by doing a private like video conference with them to show them the piece and so forth. During that opportunity, we're able to share more about the designer and how they created or what steps they're taking to be more responsible, who they work with, you know, the transparency of their supply chain. And where we have that information and we're able to share it, I think it definitely does add a new layer to the customer understanding what they're buying.
And I want to go into Fairmind Gold and recycled gold. For listeners, can you give an overview of what it means to use those materials?
Right. Well, I certainly learned a lot about gold when I did a project, gosh, a year or so ago now, with Radical Jewelry Makeover. And I'd love to share more about that because that's one of the great ways that we kind of kickstarted our consumer kind of campaign around more education around climate change and its impact on the jewelry industry. But to answer your question around gold, you know, the traceability of gold is really important. We all know about the traceability of diamonds and how important that is. People don't realize that there's quite a sinister and dark background to where your gold may come from. Even gold that you think you're buying from a very legitimate source has often been mixed with artisanal gold, which doesn't have the transparency that you want. So when the value of gold increased so significantly, a lot of artisanal mining operations took off, and in places like South America. And unfortunately, those operations were often in conjunction with more shadowy operations, including drug trafficking, sex trafficking, human exploitation, slave labor. And in conjunction with that, they used practices that weren't safe for the artisanal miners who were participating in them. So there was a lot of mercury, a lot of health and environmental damage that was taking place in relation to these workers and the environments in which they lived. So I actually worked with Amazon Aid, and I really encourage anyone to go and look up their website. I did a showing of a documentary that they produced, and that was again part of our campaign that we took it. We did an event for clients, we took it to schools, and we talked about it a lot. And that highlighted the dangers of what's taking place in the gold industry right now. I think also as I learned more about gold, I appreciated the difference between recycled gold and fair mine gold. So I think we all use, and many of the designers I work with too, you know, use recycled gold in a positive way. And I think it is in the sense that you are taking a step to understand where your gold is coming from. However, the danger is that recycled has a very positive connotation, right? That you're really doing something good by using recycled gold. Unfortunately, the definition of recycled when it comes to gold doesn't necessarily mean anything positive, because it could be just a gold bar that was in a bank that was then used to create jewelry, right? And so then that journey isn't really all that positive in terms of how that's impacting the industry. And someone who I've learned a lot from in this area is Christina Miller, who is a jewelry consultant and works a lot in this space. And she was also one of the founders of Radical Jewelry Makeover and was my sort of first introduction to all of the kind of conversations that are taking place around gold and around recycling and jewelry generally. But that's what sort of recycled gold is. And it's also not tackling the issues of mining, because gold mining is always going to take place. So yes, you could use recycled gold, but again, it could be from a bank, it could be from a phone. It doesn't attack the root problems of the exploitation and dangers that are taking place in the mining industry itself. And I think if you look at the mining industry, you look at the damage, for example, and really easy visual to understand maybe is a damage to the Amazon rainforest. And that degradation is incredible. Again, if you look at Amazon Aid, you can see all the imagery and the statistics. I think that's where it starts to really hit home and you realize change has to happen. And there are organizations like Fairmine Gold, who we work with, who are making change in this area. And through Fairmine Gold, if you were to buy and use Fairmine Gold, you are getting a guarantee that the miners are being paid fairly, that there's environmental protection that is in place to protect the area where this mining is taking place. If you use Fairmine Gold also, it's a completely different process to using regular gold. So for example, there are only two companies in New York who work with Fairmine Gold, because it's a very different, you're not mixing gold. So it has to be completely separated from the rest of the gold that they work with. And so you're paying this premium, yeah, to work. And what we did was we created a Fairmine Gold collection, and we did it really as a blueprint so that designers we work with who are considering Fairmine Gold can look to who we work with, how much it costs, what the numbers kind of played out at, and use that as a roadmap to hopefully create their own Fairmine Gold collections.
I want to open up the conversation more towards your view on sustainability and responsibly produced products. For me, I think that sustainable products are products that have a positive impact on every stakeholder involved, whether you're a business, whether you're an individual, but touching this product helps enhance wherever you are in the supply chain. In other words, benefiting society in some way. And like you say, is you don't want to say sustainable, but socially responsible. And I think that's a great way of putting it, because it's really difficult to fully prove that you're a sustainable brand.
Yeah, and I think it's actually impossible in jewelry to say you're completely sustainable. But I'm on the same page as you. I think for me also, the inspiration is I have two young daughters and I'm thinking of the world that they're going to grow up in. And I don't want to be the generation that destroyed it all, right? We want to encourage change in education. I want this next generation to be more mindful of how they consume their goods. And again, with the jewelry edit, you know, we aren't encouraging like buy like a different pair of earrings every month. We are saying find, you know, or buy something, whatever's the latest trend. We actually very rarely, if ever, do like trend stories. It's more about finding something that you can keep and hopefully give your daughter, you know. And that doesn't mean it has to be an exquisite diamond that you keep in the safe and you wear occasionally. It can be something that you wear every day and means something to you, and that still has a quality that means it's not disposable. You know, we carry a line called Kozak, which is gold filled and has a lifetime guarantee. And they have plenty of pieces that are, you know, under $250, under $100 even. And that's just a great example of a line. It's all handmade, a small group of women artisans here in the US. And they make beautiful classic jewelry that's accessible, but has a very transparent story behind it.
In terms of key challenges our industry still needs to overcome for a more responsible and sustainable future, let's focus on more the downstream market. What challenges do you see, and how do you see the downstream businesses overcoming that?
Sure. Well, I think it's two things, one of which we've discussed a lot of already, which is sort of consumer education, so that they know what to look for, they know the questions to ask. And I think it's also more responsibility on the part of retailers and designers to be more transparent. So for that, and it's something that we work on at the Jewelry Editor a lot, because we work with so many different designers who, for example, use terms in different ways. And I think more clarity on what terms mean are important, because I think a couple of years ago, and you still see today, people throw around the word sustainable a lot when it comes to, for example, their jewelry line. And it's really hard to understand what that means. And when there was no universal or consistent definition about that, it's very unclear. So it was a great way of, and it's a term I'm sure you've talked about a lot on your podcast now, called greenwashing. Right. And so people would just be like, oh, okay, they'd see recycled gold, for example, and just be like, okay, done, checked, I'm doing something great, without really understanding what recycled gold means. So I think the EU has taken probably more of a lead in this space. I'm sure the US will follow in time, but the EU has recognized the need for clarity and consistency and how you describe products and what that means. And I think it's important for the jewelry industry to adopt something similar. I know that the Responsible Jewelry Council, the Jewelry Vigilance Committee, who I work with, they are really a great kind of starting point for designers to sort of look and learn and figure out like what, you know, use their resources to try to figure out how they can frame their messaging better and offer more clarity to customers. And I think that's important. I think that's a big hurdle, because then when you buy something, you really are confident in the piece that you are purchasing, right? I think it really hurts those who have taken a lot of steps to be more responsible when other people who aren't as responsible are using all these eco-friendly terms without any clear understanding for the customer of what differentiates them.
Yeah, the greenwashing is especially important. And what you said about the EU, the US is definitely lagging behind, and regulation is certainly needed to help kickstart some of the change. And even looking at what's happening right now with the sanctions, when you take a really intense situation, there is opportunity there, because now the industry is going to be more transparent, hopefully be able to track and trace this. That's on a digital ledger, so you can prove where your materials come from. So what are your future plans for the Jewelry Edit in terms of sustainability and responsible luxury, whether that's events or some strategic initiatives that you're working on?
We do have a really exciting announcement coming up, and I wish I could tell you it now, but I'll probably be ready to announce in about 1 or 2 months. So you'll have to wait. I don't know when this podcast will go live, but maybe it'll be around the same time. But we have an exciting program in place that we're excited to launch that does, I think, speak a lot to more social responsibility in the industry and hopefully getting that message through to the next generation of designers. And I think that's sort of a really important part of our mission. We obviously do a lot of mentoring and working with emerging talent. But, you know, for example, when I mentioned the Radical Jewelry Makeover project we did, I took designers that participated in that, and we spoke at every major fashion school in New York. We even went to like a middle school, an elementary school. We want to get this conversation happening in more spaces and influence the next generation of designers to keep environmental issues more front and center of their design process. I should probably explain what Radical Jewelry Makeover was, since I've mentioned it a few times. So it was a project that we hosted here in New York, and we were the organization to do that here in the city. I think now it's been done a few times, but basically it's a concept that was created by Susie Ganch and Christina Miller. And it's where you collect, we collected over 100 pounds of junk, basically. It was, and not all of it, by junk I mean unwanted jewelry, because it was jewelry that was sitting in people's drawers that was either broken, unwanted. We had a lot of chain store jewelry that we received, but we also received beautiful, like, one piece earrings where the person had lost the other piece, or just stones that they collected and never done anything with. And we collected over 100 pounds of this jewelry. And then I asked 12 designers from the jewelry edit to sift through all of this jewelry and find pieces that they wanted to transform into something new. And then we were able to tell the story of kind of reimagination. And we were lucky enough to be profiled in the New York Times. And I think it was great to see these incredible designers look and find pieces that were really unwanted and unused, and I don't know, were probably destined for a junk pile somewhere, and turn them into like works of art. I think we still have a few pieces still for sale, but we sold through so many because it had such a great story behind it. And I think it was really very positive in terms of not only telling the story of the designer's process of how they imagined and were inspired to create something so beautiful, but also telling the story of how transformative jewelry can be, literally in this case, because we took something that was unwanted or broken, or, you know, I remember these like tangles and tangles of chains that were sitting in people's drawers and that they just dumped, you know, on us in these bags that we'd open up and find all these crazy pieces. But it was amazing to repurpose them into something beautiful.
The narrative of the jewelry industry is really that in its most basic form, it's pure creation, it's pure creativity. And I'm so inspired by people like you who are focused on the next generation and educating them to want to do good, right, in the next couple decades.
Yeah, and I think that there's motivation to do that. And I think people will be even more motivated when customers start asking more about that. And I think that's a really important piece for us, is to have dialogues like this so that, you know, customers know what to ask for. Because that's the feedback we get a lot, which is that, well, what should I ask for when I'm in a jewelry store? Or even if it's with us, we get a lot of emails about that. Like, you know, well, can you tell me about what this stone is made from? And we encourage those sorts of conversations and dialogues because that's something that we want to be more transparent about. I think it's just to ask for as much transparency as possible. And in some stones, like I'd mentioned earlier, there is no traceability, unfortunately. I think blockchain is sort of new. Yeah. So we're seeing that more. And of course, you and I have our mutual friend, Vivian, who started Solaire. And I've worked with her on a few small collections. And I think it's about being able to be like, okay, this is the traceability of this metal or the stone. Also, like, who worked on the piece? Like, is this designer have a small workshop, or does she make it all by hand herself? Where is that workshop located? You know, how many hands did this piece of jewelry pass through? And, you know, really, even if it's an $80 piece, I think that's still money that's still valuable to ask. And I love, for example, I think I had mentioned a piece, or I described a piece earlier where it was like hand painted and there was this incredible patina work. And that's a designer who I was thinking of called We Dream in Color, who's a Black designer out of Massachusetts. And their jewelry literally comes to us like wrapped in newspaper. And it's incredible, like little pieces of art. It's been worn by Zendaya. It's been on the covers of plenty of very high profile glossy magazines. But you can get a little piece of this luxury, right, at a very accessible price point. And I'm able to tell their story very easily because it's literally like handmade made right here in Massachusetts by a very small team of women. And that's easily a very accessible story. I think when you get into more complicated pieces, or, you know, we sell a Pippa small necklace, which has 22 karat gold and is full of different gemstones, that becomes a little bit harder because we can identify all those stones, but we can't necessarily trace the origin of all those stones. Or we can say that Pippa works in Turkey and India, and like, this is where this piece was created, but it's never as straightforward. And all of these designers that I work with, at least, I think are trying to move the needle to become more transparent. So I think you just start with very broad questions when you go in. And it's certainly at the Jewelry Edit, we make it a huge part of our education to be able to tell those stories. I think one of the reasons why I started the Jewelry Edit is because I found if I walked into a department store, the people who worked the jewelry floor didn't have all those answers, couldn't tell all those stories. And that had been my personal experience with my own brand when it was sold in department stores. I knew that the people behind the counter couldn't tell my story or didn't even know my story, and so weren't able to do that. And so we try to really make it our mission to be able to learn as much about the designer as possible and tell those stories. And I think the beauty of running a small business, for all the challenges and headaches that it has, I think what's nice is that I personally know like every designer. I probably have, you know, met their children. I know a lot about the backstory and the inspiration and the struggles, frankly, that a lot of designers go through. And so I really am able to offer a human element to what people are buying.
That really is the ideal way to run a business, to have those special connections with your clients, the people that you work with, the people that are where you source from.
I just need to clone myself to be able to do this. You know, that's the hard part.
I think they're working on that somewhere. We'll have to ask MIT. So really quickly too, we mentioned blockchain briefly before. What are your views on integrating more of that technology into the jewelry sale?
Well, I mean, I love it. And I think it's a great starting point, though, because obviously it gives a level of transparency. For those of you, the listeners who don't know, it gives a level of transparency in terms of where your piece came from. So you can see where the material was bought and all the hands that it passed through. So it's wonderful in that sense. What it doesn't offer, however, are more details around environmental degradation or human exploitation that may have occurred along that line, but we aren't aware of, right? So it addresses one aspect, but not others. But I think it's a starting point. I think I when we did it with a New Zealand collection or curation of jewelry, and we worked with Solia to do that, it was wonderful to be able to show that timeline of the making of the piece, and also on top of that, offer stories around and behind the making of the piece. But certainly it's just one aspect. I think there are others that also need to be addressed. And I'm sure, you know, again, I think there are smart people who are working on this. And I think if the industry embraces it together, we can figure out ways to make it more transparent and more helpful.
Yeah. And I think that provenance is going to be such a major strength for our industry, and to help pull the curtains down and show the public what the industry really is, and hopefully help shape a new narrative.
Yeah, and I want people to want to do that, right? I think we all participate in a lot of conversations and a lot of conferences about wanting to make change, and it's important to have those dialogues, but actually implementing those changes is a different thing altogether, and executing on them. Right. And again, I'm a small player. I would love the bigger players to really take the lead and show us what they're doing, and we can all learn from them. And hopefully I can then influence some of the smaller designers that we work with to follow a similar path. And so I love all the conversations that are taking place. I'm looking forward to seeing more change, which will happen in time. I remain positive.
What advice would you give to aspiring jewelry designers that you work with, or perhaps future entrepreneurs who want to embark on creating a sustainable business model and creating ethical brands and businesses?
I think the key is authenticity. So whatever you create, and whether you're trying to create something responsible or just something period, it has to come from your heart. And that sounds so cliche, but I mean, it has to be, it shouldn't be something that's like, this is a great business idea that I want to market and sell and I can, you know, go viral and make a lot of money. It has to be something that speaks, that demonstrates something about yourself or your values or your creative drive that encompasses a little bit about you, right? And I think if you are passionate about design, if you're passionate about the environment, you will create things that hopefully share that with the world. I also would really advise people to find a mentor, to learn as much as you can. I think when I started my business originally, I spent months just in like the New York Public Library in the city, looking through all old Mughal jewelry books and learning as much as I could about Indian artisanship, because that was the foundation for my jewelry line. It was taking traditional Mughal jewelry and interpreting it in a more modern, wearable way. And so I learned as much as I could. And now, of course, because I don't want to date myself, you know, that was back when I was in an actual library, like looking at books. Now you can learn so much more even on the internet, though I still really value books and I encourage that. But there are ways to access all of this information, whether it's through a YouTube video or incredible industry organizations like Jewelry Vigilance Committee, Responsible Jewelry Council, who have all these online resources and brochures that you can download and are incredibly educational. I also think just staying abreast of change and of news. You know, I encourage with my students at Parsons, every week we're talking about what's happening in the industry, like what's an interesting, you know, topic that people are talking about. And I think that's just a great way to stay fresh and in touch with what's going on and to feel a part of it, to have an opinion on things and change is important as well.
I love that. I think this most simple universal principles are the answer. Just again, that authenticity and feeling what comes from the heart and bringing that out to the world. So I have one last question for you. Sure. Thinking we're both of us are standing in the middle of Times Square looking at a big billboard. What would you want to convey about the industry? How would you convey it? And what might it say?
Oh, that's a great question. I would want people to know about jewelry that you have to go back to the roots, right? Yeah. Jewelry throughout history has been about telling a story. It has been about telling the world something about yourself. Jewelry should be a unique communication. It's not about everyone having the same, you know, bracelet or the same big statement, you know, necklace or trend. It's about something much more personal. And if you look through history, whether it was ancient Egypt or, you know, in South Asian culture, you look at the old texts and the old drawings, jewelry is just incredible medium for storytelling. And I want us to go back to that aspect of jewelry and to become less enamored with the carat size of a stone or who wore it on the red carpet. I want to go back to what makes this piece feel special to you.
I feel like we just came back full circle from the beginning of the episode on how and why you started the jewelry edit. I love that. Do you have any last remarks, any other words of wisdom you wanted to leave with us today?
Well, I hope I've left some words of wisdom. That would be great. No, this has just been a wonderful story. I'm so excited that you're highlighting and having these conversations. It's, you know, it's what I really strive to do with at the Jewelry Edit. I think the more dialogue, the better. And I hope that this inspires people who are listening to want to make change and to continue their journey towards change in the industry. It's very much needed, as we all know. And change is slow. I think the jewelry industry is notoriously slow at making change. But I think this groundswell of dialogue and consumer interest will help that. So I'm excited to see what's next.
I love it. For listeners today, where might they find you to connect and help support the amazing, incredible work you're doing with the Jewelry Edit?
Sure. Well, please like go visit our website, thejewelryedit.com. On Instagram, we're at Jewelry Edit. Those are obviously great ways to connect us. and look out, please sign up for our newsletter. We have numerous in-person events. I think I am personally doing 5 days this month alone. We're celebrating Holi, and we're doing a special event with all beautiful Indian chocolates and festive dress, and talking about a really special curation of Indian designers that aren't available here in the US that we are showcasing. Then we're doing a pop-up with an incredible brand called Misho, which is a British Indian brand, a huge celebrity favorite. We're doing 3 days showcasing them in the meatpacking district. But again, I don't know when this podcast is coming out. So best to sign up to our newsletter, follow us on Instagram, and we do incredible events for people to learn about the stories behind the pieces. So I'd love to see more people attending and coming out and supporting and learning more about our incredible designers.
Terrific. For those of you listening, I will link those down in the show notes below. Rosina, thank you so much. And I hope to do this again with you soon. You are quite the inspiration, and I'm so happy we were able to do this today.
No, thank you. What a pleasure and a privilege to talk about the Jewelry Editor and what we do. I'm excited to just continue this conversation, and one of many, I hope.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Well, best of luck with all the future events coming up.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can catch more Responsible Luxury Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and the Laurenti New York Media page. If you have any questions you want answered or ideas to share, please reach out to us at concierge@laurentinewyork, and I link that down in the show notes below. Or you can connect with me directly on LinkedIn, Instagram, and X. Let us come together to transform the future of responsible luxury. See you next week.